From the bayous in Louisiana to the timber country up north, you'll find them out on the trap line chasing furs to put up on the board. Mixing up another batch of that magical stuff, chilling around the fire after the show. Hey, it's Sarah and Jeff, and maybe a guest on the Trappin' Radio.
All right, welcome to Trapping Radio. I am here sitting at the kitchen table with Larry Miller, and we just watched the sun come up. It was a beautiful sunrise this morning, and we've been chatting for a couple hours, and I thought, you know what, we should have been recording some of our conversation. So anyway, I just thought I would turn the recorder on and visit with Larry. So Larry, welcome to the show, and thank you for agreeing to sit down with me yet this morning before we get checking.
Well, so, good morning, and thanks for having me out here today. It's been a great time out here, having a lot of fun.
Yep. So you've been out here, what, you got here on Friday?
Yes.
Today is Thursday, so we've had a little bit of trapping together.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, we've been running pretty hard. I guess it would be more of a steady pace. We've been having a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. I'm out here to have fun. I don't care about, well, how much we catch. Numbers don't mean nothing.
Yeah.
It's just a fun part.
Yeah. So you're from Pennsylvania.
Yes, I am.
And so kind of you're well involved in the trapping industry. You're a member of the Pennsylvania Trappers Association and do a lot of work for them. So trapping is something that you have grown up with. Would that be maybe? I know a lot about trapping recently. Let's go way back. When did you first start trapping?
It's probably about 12 or 13. I know it was about 12. My one cousin was catching some muskrats, and I seen that, and I think, wow, this is neat. So that Christmas, Mom got us some traps, got me some traps for Christmas, and that started it. The only problem was my dad never trapped but a few muskrats. My grandfather came from Rochester, New York, and he trapped muskrats and skunks. So neither one had a lot of experience. My dad never caught a coon in his life. He never, I don't know if he ever caught any possums, but muskrats was the only thing he ever caught. Well, then I started trapping, and I didn't have no clue what I was doing. My dad tried to show me how to set a trap in a muskrat hole, a foot trap. That was a disaster. We never caught a muskrat because he didn't really understand the correct position where to put the trap. But you know what? When you're only about 12 or 13, you have no clue. So it was, I never caught a muskrat for quite a few years. Then I started trapping, and me and my brother, we'd actually find possum tracks. So we would track them down to their den, set traps right in the den, which in Pennsylvania is sort of illegal. But, you know, hey, you're 12 or 13. You don't know what the laws are.
Yeah.
And so I was the possum king. We'd catch 35, 40, 45 possums a year.
And, oh my gosh. So was a possum your very first catch?
Oh yeah.
It was.
I mean, that was our go-to animal. And all we had was a bunch of old number one jumps and long springs. We didn't have a 1.5 or a 2. That's all we had. And those traps were old. They're a week. And so a lot of times we'd set 2 traps because if you can get a possum, he'd pull out.
Oh,
and I know we had a, now I can look back now and say, yeah, we had coon occasionally, and they got out. But my mom, she bought us traps for Christmas, and she bought us number 2 square jaws. Worst coon trap in the world.
Uh-huh.
Now, I do use a lot of square jaws today, but I've put double jaws in them. So now they'll hold coon in that. It's like some people call it a chew bar, but it's really, I just call it a double jaw. But there's a half inch between them. And that makes a big difference as far as the chewing goes. And you don't lose them like that much. Mm-hmm. But,
So that was your first your first catch was the possums.
Oh, yeah.
Then what did you do with them? I mean, did you remember selling them?
Oh, yeah. I would skin them. I would skin them in my pack. He got, I don't know where he came up with this, but he got us a putty knife, and he rounded the corners off. I'm talking a putty knife that you would use for doing putty work. You know, it's 1.5 inches across. And we had taken scrape that possum with a putty knife. You're talking hours. Just one possum. It'd take us 15, 20 minutes just to skin a possum. Uh-huh. Now it's like, now it's just heartbeats to skin something. But back mm-hmm. then it was, and I didn't have a sharp knife. My dad couldn't sharpen a knife to save his butt. I'm telling you.
And so, we talked about that yesterday.
Yeah. Yep. Now, you seen my knife last night. You seen me skin for the first time, right?
Yes,
really?
Yeah.
That knife looked like a butter, like that knife was going through butter, wasn't it?
Yeah, you were moving quick over there.
What was I skinning? What, 2 or 3 to year one?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
But it was a lot of great memories looking back now. And look, I look back now and some of the things I thought as a kid when you, because I didn't know how to read sign properly. So you're looking at stuff and you're thinking, you just got the, you weren't thinking as animal would. You were thinking as a kid would, had no clue what was going on. And I didn't have no magazines to look at and read. There was a couple older guys in the area that trapped, but they would never tell you or show you anything. Mm. Now I did find a one guy set, and he always sat there every year, but I looked at this set, looked at it, but I've never touched a trap because that's against the law. But I couldn't figure out what it meant to bed a trap.
Okay.
And if you would read a book, it says bed your trap. Well, it doesn't explain it. Now, when you're even a 14, 15-year-old kid, you don't know anybody, the hardest part is the description is to interpret what they mean. And bedding a trap, it didn't come for quite a few years till mm-hmm. I actually went to a trapping demo till I completely understood what bedding a trap meant. Mm-hmm. And then once, that was like the turning point in when I was trapping, I actually started catching a lot more critters.
So you mentioned a trapping demo. Was that maybe your early memories of going to a convention?
The first ones I ever went to was not a PTA convention. It was actually when Neil Olson came to Hughesville, Pennsylvania for 4 or 5 years and put them on. And I did. I would sit there all day long watching demo after demo. And that's where I put a lot together. That's where my trapping career really picked up and took off. And because I used to do a lot of coon hunting every night. And I'd only have a few traps set. And I had a coon dog. I had a pretty good dog. But she passed away and I could never find one to replace her. That's when I really started getting into just trapping, and mm-hmm. I quit deer hunting and everything just to go trapping because I'd rather go trapping.
Mm-hmm.
So, but last year I did some I haven't done for 30 years.
I remember. Tell us.
I actually went deer hunting mm-hmm. because my youngest boy, Mikey, talked me into getting a license, and I have a camp, and I shot a nice 8-point buck and a doe and have maybe 2.5-3 hours of hunting time. I shot them both off the back porch at camp.
You led me to believe this big hunting story. Now the truth is coming out.
I shot the buck Saturday night. I went out and stood outside for about 20 minutes on the back porch waiting for a buck to come up through the fields. Nothing. So I went and checked my traps. So then I was actually Saturday night, which was the first day, I'm sitting inside leaning up against the window. My wife Donna, she's sitting right behind me watching the news. It was a couple minutes before 5 o'clock. Oh, here comes a doe. I got to get out back. Well, I went out and she heard the storm door when I was going out the back door and she started running. And I thought, doggone it. She heard me. And there she goes. And I ain't going to try to shoot her in the butt, run away from me. So she looked up the hill. And she turned and down through the cornfields. Something's coming from above. Mm-hmm. Well, here comes that buck. And then here comes a car slowing down. Now, the guy, I looked up, and the guy had his arm out the window. I'm thinking, why does he have his window down so quick? Now, he's seen that buck cross. I think he might have been thinking about shooting it. Well, that buck come just walking down through the field. and they stopped at the cornfield. That was a mistake. One shot, it was dead. But now that guy, I'm standing, my camp is real close to the main road. I'm 80 feet off the road. Now I was shooting parallel to the road. Now the buck's only out there 80 yards. Mm-hmm. Now this guy's out at 80 yards.
Yeah.
Now I'm shooting out like 80 feet below him. So I'm just wondering how loud that muzzle blast was. Because he took off, because I'm sure he's like, where's this guy shooting from? Because he couldn't see nobody.
Yeah.
Oh, it was great.
So you got him.
Yeah.
Cool.
2.5. Then I stood outside the next morning for a little while. Then that Sunday night, and then Monday morning, I shot a nice doe.
Nice.
So, and that's some of the where some of those meat sticks came from.
That's what I was just going to ask.
Yep. So.
Okay, so going back to trapping, you said that the demos and the Hughesville convention kind of it was a jump start to the trapping career. What was the change then? You were chasing the possums. Now you've learned how to bed a trap. Now what were you into?
Well, I tried to catch fox for years, and you know, really, one of the things I can look back now and see what I did wrong was I didn't bed the trap. There was many times there was fox tracks right there. And because I didn't know how to bed a trap, we just set the trap, set it there, and then just sifted dirt over it. Well, they would come in there and say, sink ankle deep or whatever, and then they'd start digging just because it was soft dirt and everything. And I didn't know how to bed the trap properly. But the thing is, like, it was really, I didn't know animal habits like I do now. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I found out about the Pennsylvania Trappers Association, I joined them, and then I started meeting a lot of people that really helped me learn. But what really taught me about animal habits is one time, I'll never forget, the first time I ever met Charlie Dobbins, and it's probably at the PTA rendezvous. I'd read a couple of his books. And then I was there talking to him, and he said something that changed the way I looked at a lot of stuff. He changed how I started observing. Mm-hmm. And that is, he told me, the animals will show you where to set the traps. And that's where I really started paying more attention to traps.
What did that mean to you? Because I mean, so many people hear that and they don't know how to interpret that. But how did you interpret that?
I started really watching the tracks. And one of the things, he has a book, he said about that in his book. And one of the things that a lot of people don't really look at is, you can find places in a stream where all you have is a smudge mark. There's no actual footprint. You can actually see in the silt on the bottom of a stream, you can actually see footprints sometimes right on the stone. But you can also see where a trout or something actually come up and brushed the stone, or you can see where the stones are cleaned off just on the side of a stone, not the bottom of a top of a stone. You can see where there's no silt. So now you know it's not because of the water current. It's from an animal touching it and mm-hmm. brushing it off. So when you start seeing spots like that, and there's places where I know guys say you can see the deep channel of a beaver, but there's also, now I trapped nothing but stony trout streams. I didn't have muddy banks most places. And the muskrats, you can actually see their trails through where they travel in the water because there's no silt on the stones. They're clean. Mm-hmm. Now, it took me a long time to see that and figure that out. But that's mm-hmm. one of the things that, you know,
sure.
I learned. Sure. Just observation. And I learned, you know, that a lot.
So, do you remember catching your first fox? Do you remember first canine figured out how to bed your trap and stuff?
I caught that.
Tell me about that.
Oh, it was like, it was a gray fox. And I set it up on a pile of dirt. I don't know why Dad dug a hole back here, did for something, and mm-hmm. it was a pile up there. And I set that on top there. I figured, you know, a fox is going to come up here and sit on top. So I set that trap up there, and I had another trap close by. Well, I caught a gray fox on top up there. Now, I set a trap there for years after that and never caught another fox.
That's how it goes.
Yeah. Yep. So that was, you know, my first red fox. I remember catching that. But, you know, I have a fox mounted in my camp. Now that fox, red fox, it's the very first fox I caught, I ever caught. And it's the only one I ever caught there because I can't set a trapper anymore. Back behind my house after I got married.
Okay.
So that one there got mounted.
Yeah.
And that was, that. I mean, you look, I can look back now and I walked out and I could see that fox bouncing up there and I going like, yes.
Yeah. So exciting.
Yeah. But that was the only one I ever caught there. Because it wasn't a couple years after that, the ground got bought. And the neighbor, he actually built his house 150 yards off the main, off the road there, mm-hmm. and behind my house. So I couldn't set a trapper. I'm in his safety zone, so I can't trap her anymore. Yeah. Then he has dogs, so that's just going to be bad news.
Yeah. So you mentioned Miss Donna.
Yes.
So were you trapping when you met Donna?
Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes. So what did she think of the trapping and?
Like her dad hunted, but she really didn't want to be a trap. But see, we got married back in 86 on October 4th. Mm-hmm. And so we decided to go to Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts for our honeymoon. So we went up there for a week. And coming back through to Pennsylvania on the way through, we stopped and seen Russ Carman so I could buy my lures for the season.
Oh, my goodness.
Now, I sat there for 3 hours and talked to Russ. So, if she didn't figure it out, then that's just too bad because we're still together after 39 years. So, I guess things are okay.
And I don't think much has changed because I've seen Donna follow you around a convention and you get to talking to somebody.
And she just leaves.
Off she goes.
Yep.
Yep. So then, y'all had kids.
Yep.
And so what I've heard stories is that you've brought your kids to the trapping conventions and they grew up trapping with you and now, you know, they trap very differently, but maybe talk a little bit about how you, how the kids were involved in trapping and how you involved them and kind of that chapter of your life.
Well, when they first started, both boys were probably about 2 years old when they were out in the trap line and you'd be there setting a trap and you go, get away from her, go back. You're going to get caught. Mm-hmm. So don't put your hands down there. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
But by the time they were 5 and 6, both boys understood death.
Mm-hmm.
They'd seen many animals get shot. So guns or knives, they'd be on the fur shed. We never had to worry about a kid touching a knife or a gun. Because they knew, they've seen it.
Yep.
They're, and by the time they're 7 or 8, they want to start skinning. Okay. Now, I don't give them a razor.
Right.
I give them a knife. They can start, and they stir, and you have to help them a little bit. And when you start something like that there, don't be doing something. You can't be doing something else. You're right there with them, and you're basically helping them skin. You have your hand on their hand. You're helping them skin. You're teaching them. And because if they use a knife like I used yesterday when you seen me, there's no, that would have been bad news.
Mm-hmm.
But I got them started that way. But one of the things I think a lot of parents, a lot of the men do with their kids that's wrong is they show their kid how to trap. They take them out. And there goes there's some deer going across the field. Mm-hmm. I see three does. But if there are kids out there and they do something wrong, they yell at them or they go about it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Larry and Mikey were both 16 and they could drive, I made sure they had a vehicle, and I told them, "See ya, you're on your own," because they have to go out there by themselves and learn. They get more out of it that way. They get, because when you stand there and you're telling them what to do at every step of the way,
mm-hmm.
I think it takes all the fun out of trapping.
Absolutely. I think you're 100% right in the fact that we need to learn from our mistakes and build our own confidence.
Yes.
In what we've learned and what we've saw, what went wrong and what went right.
And both my boys do not trap like I trap. Larry has his methods, and Mikey has his, and I have mine. And do they are they doing something wrong? No. We just go about it in a different way. Because when Larry's growing up at these conventions, and once he hits 16 and he could drive, he's going and talking to some of these big name trappers, and they're telling him how to do things. It's not the way I did it, but he went out and did it differently. And I didn't stand in his way and say, oh, you can't do it that way, that's wrong. Mm-hmm. I just let him go. Mm-hmm. And he learned how to trap. He traps totally different than me.
What do you mean by different? Can you describe maybe just some examples of totally different than you?
I'm a blind setter. He's bait and lure all the way. He don't even set blind sets.
That's what I like to hear.
You know what? That kid is so funny watching him. He'll go and set. For years, I kept telling him, move up near the trail. Set at the trail. Mm-hmm. Does he? No. And then all of a sudden, because he'd say, Dad, can you come? I can't figure out why I can't catch no coon here. So I'll never forget the one stop we went to. I looked over, why don't you sit right here? Oh, I can't anchor my trap. Well, I would find something to anchor here. And he walks upstream about 35 feet and set the trap. I go, why'd you go way up there? The coon trail comes here, cuts under here, and goes on up here. Well, there's no place to anchor. Well, I would find a way. I would find something to put a trap here. So then finally he moved down to where the trail was. He started catching coon.
There it is.
So now he will look for the trail and set his, not blind sets. He only puts bait and lure in. So one year we had a contest, right? No, he had a contest. He told me he was going to catch more coon than me.
Okay. Like,
okay, great. No, I really wasn't worried about it. So he was out, starts trapping coon, and I started trapping. And we're probably neck and neck as far as numbers go. We got all done. I think he beat me by one or two, which I really didn't care. I was happy he did. Because, you know, it's like I probably could have beat him by more if I could have put more time into it. Because he's in high school yet, okay? Mm-hmm. But when you took our coon, and if you started stacking up according to size, he had his tickler's large coon. He had a big pile, the biggest pile, extra large, just a hair smaller, 2X, smaller, 3X. That was the smallest pile. If you go over to my pile, my 3X is, and my 2X was the biggest two piles. Then you go down to extra large, and my small was the smallest pile. And he said, oh, I got more coon than you, Dad. We went to the first sale. I got more money than you, Larry.
Yeah, aw.
but the thing is, he's sitting down in the creek at these trails. He's catching mom and the kids. I'm setting up on the high bank trail blind sets. I'm catching Dad. Mm-hmm. So, but that's the difference between, we were trapping the same area.
Yeah.
You know, we're basically, he's trapping in my area, you know?
Right.
So it's so funny when you look back now. Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, now Mikey, he's actually a better trapper than Larry because he pays attention more. He pays attention to the details. Larry just glosses over it and goes on. He tries to set more traps and get more traps out, okay. Which is, you can catch a lot more animals that way.
Right.
But yeah, just, they're two different boys. There's, you can't.
So do you have any Mikey stories? You said he's more attention to detail. He sets maybe fewer traps and takes more time. And
yeah. Yeah, he's more detail oriented. Mm-hmm. When he sets a trap, he's not worried about speed to get done. He's never going to have a great numbers trapper because he's more relaxed back. He's not as ambitious as Larry. So you have two different personalities there. Okay. Larry hates putting fur up. Mikey puts fur up.
Okay.
Top lot of awards. The kid didn't put up fur great. Okay. Yeah. He's not the fastest skinning. He just takes his time. I'll get there when I get there. Don't worry. You know. Yeah. He's never late. When he goes somewhere, he's never late. Larry, he's always late. Oh, my God. I'm just telling you. It's two different boys.
Yeah.
Now, there's 13 years between them.
Right. Yeah.
It's like having two different families.
Yeah.
You know what happens when I tell people I have, you know, a family and I have two boys and there's 13 years between them?
What do they say?
You know what their first thought is?
What is it?
Oh, you got married again.
Right.
Nope. We just forgot how I made the first one.
Oh, that's right. I knew that was coming. I've heard that before.
Hey, you gotta have fun.
That's right. We've been having fun all week.
Yeah.
Yep.
Laughing every day, all day long.
All day. Yep. So another cool thing that happened this week, and you know, talking about your boys growing up, and the picture that you got a couple days ago from your wife of your little grandson.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So talk about what it's been like to watch that, and share that story with everybody. From the picture and who it was, and.
Well, my grandson Mason. Yeah. He'll be 9 here on November 20th. And he caught a coon. And I know Larry's still setting traps for him because he's a little small, but the kid is total motion. All he wants to do is be outside. He shot a doe earlier this year with a crossbow.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
And yesterday I got the phone call from my wife saying he got a coyote.
Yes.
So
and it was funny what you said about him going to school.
Oh, I guarantee you his mouth never shut up, and probably before it was 9 o'clock, I think the whole school probably knew he got
a
coyote.
I think so too. Yeah.
And you've met Mason before. Uh-huh. He's
a character.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He's very high energy.
Yes, yep.
But he's very serious at the same time. Mason is very focused on being outside and being productive, and he rides his little bike and he goes everywhere at the conventions. And like you said, when he's at the house, he asks you, what's he call you? Pop, Papa, Pap, I need a hammer and I need nails.
Oh yeah.
And, so you always have him fixed up with whatever he needs.
Well, I know that we were told that, we spoil them. We let them do whatever they want. Yes, we do. No, we don't. Because he knows if he's there, and that if he does something wrong, he will be disciplined. Mm-hmm. Okay. I have a lot of flower beds at home, and the flowers are not my wife's. They're not Donna's. They are mine. Mm. Okay.
I did not know this about you.
You have to stay out of my flower beds. And my grandkids knew that. They learned that real quick. Mm-hmm. And I know about my granddaughters. I had to spank the one time because she would not listen. And she ran in crying to her mother. And I said, stay out of my flower beds. You're knocking them over. You're stepping on them. They didn't learn as quick as Mason. Mason, he caught on real fast.
He's watched those girls.
No, he's 4 years younger than the youngest one. Okay. And he's 7 years younger than the oldest one. So he learned real quick. He got one spanking and one scolding, and that was all it took.
Yeah.
Now, I'll be there. Mason? Yeah, Pap. Okay. Don't throw it into the flowers. Be real careful. And he's really good about that. Mm-hmm. The kid is, when I go out to the garage and he's out there and he's doing something, no matter what it is, I make sure he has the same tools I got. And he's right there alongside of me, and we'll be out back working, loading the trailer with scrap or whatever I'm doing, he's helping. And we'll be there, and I get done, and we said, oh, let's go down and see what Moomoo's doing. He goes, well, don't we have something else to do?
Oh.
So he has really good work habits, but she's only 9. It's great seeing that.
Yeah.
You know, my two boys, as far as work habits, Larry's right there just like Mason. Mikey, not so much. But you can't compare the two boys.
Yep.
Okay. Now, I'm very happy. I'm very proud. Both my boys trap. And one of the things, if you go and talk to a lot of trappers, their kids and grandkids do not trap at all. Mm-hmm. And I think because at 16, I turned them loose and said, you're on your own. I think had more to do with it than anything.
Did they trap a lot with you? When they were younger? I mean, where they were always with you? And
one of the things I did, and that is, every morning before school, we would run their trap line. So I didn't say, you got to wait till you're 16 to trap. I made sure they had a trap line starting day one. Mm-hmm. They knew when the season started. Day one, we're out there setting traps. And as soon as they could set a trap on their own, okay, set your trap. Mm-hmm. Where are you going to put it? Then I would correct them a little bit, mm-hmm. you know, tweak them a little bit. But I wouldn't stand there and say, no, you can't set it there. You got to put it over here.
Sure.
You have to leave a kid learn. They learn more by mistakes than by doing it right. Because mm-hmm. If you make it so easy for them, now it's not a challenge. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of the parents, a lot of the men, they would tell their kid, oh, set the trap right here. Mm-hmm. Do this. After a while, it's not fun. Mm-hmm. They took the fun out of it.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think that's why my boys still trap. Mm-hmm. And a lot of theirs don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, those are, sounds like such fun and fond memories of the boys growing up. Since I've known you at the conventions and I've been attending camp, your camp in particular, you and Miss Donna always have good food and a campfire.
Yep.
And cold beer.
Oh, yeah.
But the camp is called Camp Two Sticks.
That's right.
So I have always known you as Larry Two Sticks Miller. And so do you want to talk a little bit about Two Sticks? And I've seen a lot of your Two Sticks sets, which has been really cool to see out here in Iowa. But I just want to kind of share maybe, you know, how you came up with that or how it became a big part of your trapping in your trapping days and at conventions to your camp name and all. Tell us the Two Sticks story.
Okay, well, back in somewhere in the 80s, I read an article by Bob Noonan, how good number 11s were on holding animals and catching and, you know, a small trap like that worked great. Well, I didn't have the money, newly married, after, you know, young kid. So I went and bought number one long springs, and I taught myself how to take them apart and make number 11s. And I'd go out there and set them, and I ended up a lot of sprung traps because they're so small, especially if you put it on a trail. And that was after the time I talked to Charlie Dobbins, and I was trying trail sets, blind sets, and them coon with their big feet and them small traps would set the trap off. And, you know, you'd have a snap trap, and if you pulled it tight to the chain and no catch circle, just stretched out. So we had our District 7 of the PA Trappers had a mini convention, and Bob Best showed up there, and he showed how to take a Y stick and use that, put that in the center of the trail, put a trap on either side or a trap on both sides, and then that coon or fox coming down the trail would step over the Y and into the trap. Well, I tried that. Hey, that helped, but I'm still getting a lot of snap traps because a smaller animal has a shorter stride, or a bigger animal, bigger stride. They were stepping over and too far or not far enough to hit the trap. Mm-hmm. So I started experimenting with two sticks. And I mean, I tried all kinds of ways to lay the sticks and configurations around that trap. And, you know, nothing really worked. Nothing was, say, 100%. There is never 100%. But nothing was even close to 50%, not even close. And then one day I just have to stick two sticks in, and it was in the summertime. I was on the trail, and I thought, I'll put these sticks here and see how animals are coming through. And I roughed it up so I could see animal tracks. And I did one in the water course where there's a 2 foot wide. And then all of a sudden I was like, I put these sticks in a different configuration in the water. And I was like, I came back a week later and I go, oh my gosh. Everything's stepping over those two sticks, and there's a one spot right there the size of a about 2.5 inches around or so where everything's stepping. Oh, so I started doing that on my trails. At first I just did it in the water, I didn't even think about using it on land.
Okay. So that's kind of where it originated, was in the water.
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe when you were mink trapping.
That's right. That's what it was. That's what it was. And that's how it came about. And then...
So it worked well in the water, and then when did you try it on land? What was your experience on land, or how did that develop?
Well, I was there one day, and I just sort of, well, if it worked in the water, it's got to work here. Mm-hmm. Now, it took me a couple of years to get the exact placement down where it seems to work the best. And nothing's 100%, but I would say, because I caught one the other day by the back foot with two sticks.
Yeah.
So, but I would say about 95% of the time, the animals coming down the trail step in with their front foot into the trap. How'd that coon miss that? Who knows? There's nothing's 100%.
Right.
But I did realize out here in Iowa, they use these grassy trails so much. My two stick doesn't work near as well because the sticks blend in with, because you got the way the grass is and where we're sitting in a right of way. And that, my trails back home I'm trapping, there's no vegetation on them a lot of times. It's just a plain trail, just leaves. So you put two sticks there and they stand out and then they step perfectly. Here, I've noticed they don't paint. They're still, I'm getting the snap traps. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie to you, I have snap traps.
Absolutely.
It happens. But out here, there's more of that because the sticks, when you put them there, they actually blend right in with
the trail,
the weeds, the debris on the side, because we're trapping stuff that's 12, 16, 18 inches tall, and it's just a little narrow trail. You put two sticks in there, they blend right in. Mm-hmm. They don't stand out to the animal that they should stutter step and step with that over those.
Sure. So can you kind of describe, I know it's hard, and I know that you don't even listen to podcasts, so the people, can you describe with words where you put the two sticks?
Yes, I can. It's very easy.
Talk a little bit about that.
I don't care what trap you use. Where you take the trail. The trail runs from you away from you. I set my trap with the levers on a 45-degree angle across the trail because I don't want the levers parallel to the trail, because anything coming up or down the trail may step on that lever first. You want that off to the side. And then you take two sticks the size of a pencil and you put one on a 45-degree angle, and you want that touching the jaw. You want that stick going into the ground at dead center trail. So directly across the trail from you. You take the other one on the opposite way. So you have two sticks, one coming in from the left, one coming in from the right, on a 45-degree angle, both touching the jaws.
But on the second one, you want to put it on the other jaw.
You want opposite sides, yes.
Yep. Right.
You want one on one side of the trap, one on the other.
Yep.
So when they're coming down there, they see that because there is an obstruction on the left, there is an obstruction on the right going up. When they see that, they step over one to step over the other, and they're going to step dead center on the pan. Mm-hmm. Just because if I was going to try to catch you, and I set a person-sized trap there, and you're walking down the trail, and I put those sticks in, you'll see them. You're going to literally step over one and step over the other. Mm-hmm. The stick, you don't lay them across the flat, because if you did that, now you're not centering the trail up. When you put them with this 45, they see this coming up on an angle from the trap. It keeps getting higher on a 45-degree angle. So if you go 10 inches up and 10 inches out, it's 10 inches. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they see that. It centers them up on the trail. They're stepping over.
Sure.
Right onto the pan, hopefully.
Yep. Makes sense.
Yep.
So you mentioned a little bit about coming to Iowa you've never trapped in Iowa. Never.
No. Never trapped out of state.
Tell the people kind of what it's been like for you to come from Pennsylvania clear to the cornfields in Iowa, and how you've had to adapt a little bit to...
Well, let's put it this way. I come out here, all my traps have grapples on, and you can't use grapples out here because there's no dang trees. There's no bushes in the
hardest part of your two-stick set is finding the sticks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm like, there's no sticks out here. Next time I have to bring some from Pennsylvania. I mean, nice, smooth, straight ones like I'm used to using. You get out here and everything has branches on it, and you got to cut them off or do something. Mm-hmm. Or you're trying to get a weed and push a weed in, and
you've used corn stalks.
Yes, I have.
You've used corn stalks.
And cattails.
And you've used cattails.
Hey, they all work, but you have to learn how to improvise. Yep. But I will say, if I wouldn't have had you two out here to help me, in a way, show me some places to set, I would have drove right by them because I had no clue. Mm-hmm. Back in Pennsylvania, they don't run across soybean fields that are picked like they do out here. Mm-hmm. I just can't. Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a total different area and totally different way to trap.
Mm-hmm. So we have right of way. So that's been something new for you. Yeah. We just drive down the road, and wherever we stop and see a trail, we hop out and
set a trap. Yep. In Pennsylvania, we have to be 150 yards from an occupied building. Mm-hmm. That don't just mean a house. That means somebody's garage or an outbuilding. If they're using it, or cattle using it, or any kind of livestock, it's considered occupied. Mm-hmm. And we can't discharge a gun. Now, if we have permission, I could set in your front yard. Mm-hmm. It's so fun. We're out here. We're within 30 yards of a place. I'm going like, we don't have permission. It don't matter. Okay?
Yeah.
Whatever. Mm-hmm. That's just so... just blows my mind to think about that. I've always heard about it, but I just, out here doing it, is like totally different.
Yeah.
It's great though. I love it.
Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah.
So you mentioned a little bit about the traps that you brought. You want to talk about, because you trap very, you brought different traps than we trap with, which is part of the thing that I love about trapping with other people is seeing how other people do it. And you mentioned the grapples and...
I took a lot of those off, and because I seen you trap with Kinsley, I'm like, look at that ditch. So I brought swivels with me, so I took my grapples off, I put the swivels on so I could stake them. Mm-hmm. And I brought extra stakes just because of it, because thinking, I better go prepare, and I'm glad I did, because it made my life a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And see, I never used many DPs, so I'm starting to stick a few of those in now, but, it's just a,
You mentioned one thing about grapples that I learned from you this week is the fact that you, and your grapples coming from the grapples that I would be using is big saber tooth, heavy drags to catch coyotes in northern Michigan and bobcats and trapping in the mesquite country. But the grapples you use are fairly small, and you can describe them. But what I learned from you is that you always anchor the grapple. And so you want to talk a little bit about kind of your theory on that and how you started doing that and why you do that. And mm-hmm. I think it's important.
Right. One of the reasons I anchor my grapples is, unfortunately, I work for myself. So I'm my own worst enemy as far as having time to check traps, because when I was building houses, I was working 80 to 100 hours a week. Then when I trapping season, I try to slow down to about 60, 65, 70. So I don't have time to trap. So I had to have a system where I want the animal right there. But one of the things I learned is when you have a catch circle, another animal comes down the trail, especially a coon, they'll walk around that. A lot more animals walk around that catch circle than you imagine. So I wanted that animal away off the trail. And I used to anchor right on the trail. So I started hooking my grapples back off the trail. They get tangled up back air, but the trail, I can pull that trap out, literally go back air in seconds, have that trap back in operation because the set is undisturbed. Its trail is undisturbed. And so I'm setting that trap back. Time is everything. It was all about speed. I didn't have time to trap like I wanted to. And then that's tied fast, or I wire up fast. And when I say I wire up fast, I've had up to 20 foot of wire to the grapple, to a bush somewhere, to get them so the animal's still there. And somebody, one time a guy said, oh, well, that wire's going to break and it'll get away. Then you have to go try to find them. I said, nope, you don't understand. As soon as that animal starts to move, hits the end of the wire, and it's going to swing left or right, and they swing back into the brush. Now they tangle up. The wire is obsolete now because the grapple takes over, and it's not, the wire's not needed. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter of pulling that out quick. I can right back, pound the set right back in, and you're down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's, I thought that was really neat, because you carry, like, you carry even pieces of wire that you reuse, small pieces of wire reuse. And just, it didn't take long to take that grapple and just wire it off to a tree as a secondary insurance policy.
That's correct.
If you will.
So. I actually take a lot of times, if I have a small sapling there, I'll take, run the chain around and actually put a knot in the chain to the grapple. And that, so I don't have to use a piece of wire. Mm-hmm. And if it never comes off. If it comes off, somebody stole the trap.
Yep.
Simple as that. Because it's not, it's a knot. It's not coming off. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned a little bit about work in construction and working long hours, and there's a lot of trappers out there that are working and maybe find it frustrating to want to trap and still have the commitment of work and family. You've been through it many years. Do you have any tips or tricks or advice for the person that is working and trying to run a trap line?
No, that's funny you say that. One of the things I always told Larry, tried to go gangbusters on trapping, and he would set 30, 40 spots and still working. And he would get up way early hours. After about a week and a half, 2 weeks, he's done. He's basically wore out. I kept trying to tell him what I did, and what I don't do it as much now because I have more time, but I would only set 6 to 8 stops, maybe 10, depends upon how close they are. I'm not trying to run the whole line. I'm only running a small chunk of it. Mm-hmm. Okay, 6 to 8, 10 stops. And I would set, to try to cover all my bases, I would set 6 to 8 stops, 10 stops per stop. I would settle on Saturday morning, get all my spots set. Then I'd probably go work somewhere, do something. I would check my line Sunday morning. That's my time in run. How long does it take to check my line? Now I know when I have to leave to get back in time to be where I have to be. Mm-hmm. And then what I would do the following Saturday, I would go set my new line. Okay. I would then check my old line. Sunday morning, I would go run the new line, time and run. Mm-hmm. And then I would go pull my old line after I pulled those.
Okay.
So I have my time and run. Yep. So then I would be, I'm only setting, like, say, 6 to 8. A lot of times only 6, 8 stops. Mm-hmm. I would have anywhere between 4, sometimes high as 8 or 10, 12 traps at one stop, because I'm trying to catch everything that's there in a week, then move on to new locations. And that way I didn't burn myself out.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great advice. And I know that when you see things on Facebook, and you're brand new to Facebook. So I got a friend request from you like a month and a half ago. I'm like, is somebody impersonating Larry, or does he really have Facebook? So, but you've been on there long enough to know that you can get in your head and compare yourself to other people and what they're catching and how many traps they're running and what's the fur that they have in their fur shed. And you start to get, you know, in your head thinking like you have to have all these traps out to be a quote trapper or be a good trapper to catch the fur. But I love what you said about just setting a small amount and being effective and not being burnt out. And I think that's, I think that's really important.
You can trap the whole season, and it's amazing how little time I actually trapped. And then you go, I remember going to fur sales and you're seeing some of these guys trapping there, and you look at your catch and you look at their catch and you start talking to them, and you find out that they run a huge line compared to what I run. Mm-hmm. And then you look at the number of critters they got. Well, I should back up from that a little bit. You look at the time they put into it, and I look at the time I put into what I did, and I was so much more efficient than they were in as far as time goes. Mm-hmm. It's like when I worked, one of the, and you said about it, I'm so organized in a way, but the way I do stuff, I try to work smarter, not harder. I try to, when I see something, what's the fastest, most efficient way to get this job done? And Trappin's the same way, no matter what you do. Get in, get out.
I say, even when we pull up to a stop, you've got your hands on your, the shovel sits in the front seat. It's in the front seat with you. And your gloves are in the front seat too. And they go hand in hand, gloves and shovel, open the door, and he's gone. Down the hill and then back up before I even basically get the truck in park.
Yeah.
So, But, like you said, you've got to learn just to be efficient. And you've dialed that into what works for you.
Yes, and that's correct.
That's important. So
you have to set your own pace. But one of the things I think some people are their own worst enemies as far as catch numbers go, or being efficient. One of the things I've noticed over the years, the people that plan do a lot better. And when I say about planning, I don't mean planning your line. I mean planning ahead of time so everything's ready to go when you need it. I start getting ready right after the season. And if you see in my traps, the pile of traps, when I'm done trapping, you're going to go, how does he ever get ready? Mm-hmm. Well, I got a pile of traps. They're all tangled up because when I'm pulling, I'm in high gear because I have too much to do. Even now when I'm semi-retired, last winter I actually threw down to 30, 35 hours a week. Soon as spring picked up, work picked up, I'm up to 55, 60 hours again. Mm-hmm. And now I'm trying to slow down. And people are calling me, hey, I got this work to do. How many times did you hear my phone ring? I'm talking to somebody about a job. I'm on vacation. Mm-hmm. But they still call me. Mm-hmm. I can't get away from work. So,
We haven't talked a lot about this, me and you, but just seeing you in the fur shed, I can tell that you enjoy the fur put up and the skinning and the fur. How did you work the fur end of the trapping when you were so busy? Because I know a lot of times people, the fur comes secondary. The catch is the fun part.
Right.
Catch is the exciting part. And then the fur could be more work. But how did you balance the fur put up and all of that?
Got really fast.
Yep.
I mean, you've seen me skin those coon. And I had to get fast because I was catching how many critters a day. And I had to get it done. And I just learned how to get fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just got faster because it's something I had to do to get done. So I could get, I remember there would be nights I'd start in the first shed. I'd be out there till 10, 11 o'clock, midnight. And then I had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever, to go track traps. So at first it was a lot harder because I wasn't that fast, wasn't as efficient. Mm-hmm. And then I just kept getting better. I'd go watch a couple demos. Oh, that's a great idea. And then I didn't have a puller. That's a great idea. I think I might get a puller because I am getting older and I can still rip that coon down pretty good. Mm-hmm. But it's like, wow, look at that. I just can't believe how that's working.
Yeah.
Watching Jeff, because I opened up. And then opened up out there and then just drill them on the floor. But opening them up is really easy and quick. Mm-hmm. The only thing was the first night there, pulling them tails off. That's not the way I did it.
Yeah. So we have a brand new fur shed. It was just delivered last Friday. Today's, so we haven't even had the shed a week. And we just got power on Monday in the shed. So thank you so much for helping kind of get it set up. You're very good with the tools and figuring things out. We'd still be out there trying to figure out how to put the lights up. But so brand new fur shed. But you were mentioning we didn't have it all set up yet. So you were pulling tails.
Oh, the hard way.
The hard way.
So I come in, I brought my grapple along. I get them all opened up except for popping the tail off. I put them up on there, that pops right off. Try to pull them off this way, it's different. It's not, I'm not used to doing it that way. And it actually harder for me because it's not the way I used. I'm not normal how I learned how to do it.
Right.
And it just everybody has a different style. There's a different way. There is no wrong way. Mm-hmm. It's just what you're used to doing and what you're comfortable with.
Yeah, that's why I said I did a video on my She Traps page and showed a little video of the shed, and I just so looking forward to having a permanent place to, you know, skin fur, because everything in my life has just kind of been shifting and moving, and you know, we're traveling different states and different skinning, and you, like you said, you just have to make do with it. But I'm really looking forward to spending the season in here and skinning a bunch of coon. So we've got Tommy Bryant coming next. He'll be here in a couple days. So we'll still be trapping here in Iowa for a little bit. But kind of wrapping up, what does your season look like? You're headed back to Pennsylvania. And will you start trapping out there?
Yeah, I'll do a little trapping. My main thing I go for is mink. Mm-hmm. Is my favorite animal. And I'll probably just go do 6, 8, 10 stops. Well, actually, you know what I do now since I'm more... have more time. I set approximately 20-21 stops. Takes me about an hour and a half to up to 3 hours if I have to touch every trap because of rising or moving or water adjustment. Sure. So, but I can get around there, and I don't start checking until daylight now. Mm-hmm. It's so nice, but I don't have to be somewhere. Mm-hmm. Because I just tell people, oh, I won't be there till about 11-12 o'clock, whatever. And because what I do a lot of times, if I have a job, like say one of my crews is starting a new siding job or roofing job, I will go get them started. Then I'll go back home and check traps.
Sure.
In the daylight. Mm-hmm. So, which I can do that now because I'm semi-retired. Mm-hmm. And all you people out there working, keep working so my unemployment keeps on coming.
I was
going
to say. Yep. All right, well, I suppose we better check our own traps that we have a bunch of them set out there. And thanks again for spending another hour here at the kitchen table and just chatting and looking forward to the day. So thanks again, Larry.
Yeah, you're welcome. It's been great out here. Mm-hmm.